Hi, and welcome to the Finally Pregnant podcast, the podcast for people who are finally pregnant after infertility and loss. I'm your host, Kat Strawbridge, and after almost 7 years trying, multiple rounds of fertility treatment, which sadly included pregnancy loss, last year I was finally pregnant, and now I am finally parenting my gorgeous daughter, Ren. Hello, hello, how are you? Thank you so much for being here and for all your continued feedback on the podcast. I know the last episode really spoke to so many of you who are in the midst of or have been through postnatal depression, and I'm so pleased that having that conversation with Sophie helped you. It would mean so much to me if those of you who dropped me amazing DMs would be kind enough to leave a review over at Apple Podcasts, as it really helps other people to find the podcast and therefore receive the support that they really need, like so many of you guys are. The more people who realise they're not alone, the better. I'll put a link in the show notes so it's really easy for you to do, and that would be amazing. Thank you. Have you been over to my Insta recently? I've had some incredible finally pregnant and parenting takeovers happening, most recently from James, the honest dad, who shared the partner's perspective of pregnancy after infertility and baby loss. It was so powerful. And if you missed it, don't worry, because I've saved it on my highlights and I'm adding other ones from the past there too, so that you can catch up. And there's loads more in the diary. So what else is going on? Since the last episode, I launched a brand new event. Well, I guess it's a course, really. The Hangout Yoga Sessions, which is a unique 4-week online yoga course especially created for those who are finally pregnant. It's going to be led by the qualified and highly experienced yoga teacher Sim, who's Yoga with Sim over on Instagram, and she really understands what it's like to experience that fear of not being able to have children because she was diagnosed with PCOS at quite a young age. Really fortunately, she did go on to have a very precious pregnancy, and through the 4-week course, I know she's going to lead you through the most wonderful journey, as well as give you the opportunity to have a place to check in and feel really, really supported. And I'll be there some of the time too. One of the things that really spurs me on to create events like this is some feedback I received after my Nurture Circle event last month. It said, "Realising everyone in the space just got it and understood was an incredible relief. I hadn't realised how much I needed to feel that validation before." Isn't that amazing? So without even realising that you needed something, when that person arrived, she just felt welcomed and understood without even saying a word. It's so amazing, so powerful, and I'm so proud that I can create that space for people because I know what it's like having been there. I totally know that the yoga course is going to feel like that too. So if you haven't already, make sure you book your spot. There's a link in the show notes. I know also that people feel like that about Hangout too. If you're new around here, the Hangout is my membership community for those who are finally pregnant and parenting. It's a safe space where you can meet, chat, support, and be supported by others who understand exactly what you're going through. I host 3 online support groups a month. There's a resources library, and members receive discounts on my events, including the yoga sessions, with lots more coming soon. If you want to know more about it, head over to the link in the show notes, or there's always going to be a link in my Instagram, so head over there too. In our life, Ren has started back at nursery. The first day wasn't too bad. I'm not sure she knew what was going on, but the second day was harder. It was like the penny dropped. I do genuinely think it's good for her, though, to have a bit more stimulation. And I'll admit it is nice to have the space to work without being conscious of her in the house. Although it does feel a little bit empty without her after all of the time, you know, with us all being here. Have your little ones gone back? How are you feeling about it? Oh, it's a funny old time, really, isn't it, still? Although we are moving out of lockdown, which is very promising, but we do need to continue to be careful for sure. Right, so on to today's episode, which is part one of a 2-part special about surrogacy. I'm very excited about this one. Just before lockdown, I was lucky enough to sit down with Sophie and Jack and Em and James, and across the next 2 episodes, I'll be sharing those conversations. Today, we start with Sophie and Jack, who at the time were the intended parents of the baby that Em was carrying. I'm really pleased to tell you Leo, their gorgeous little miracle, is now in their arms, having been born by C-section on the 31st of March. I won't go into it all here, as Sophie and Jack will tell their story in just a minute, but just to say, it was such a pleasure to even be in a room with this group of people. The love that I could feel within these couples and their friendships was so powerful, and I want to thank you all for allowing me to be part of that, even just for one evening. And that's it for now, other than to say that I'm looking forward to sharing the next episode with you, which will be the story from Em and James's side, and Sophie and Jack join in that chat too. But I hope you enjoy this, and I will see you soon. Take care. Bye. Hi there, Sophie and Jack. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Thank you for welcoming me into your home. It's amazing.
Thank you for coming.
And thank you for sharing, you know, your story. It is just so amazing for you to be so open and support other people. And Sophie, you mentioned just when we were talking before about how when you were within this journey, you know, you looked for stories of surrogacy. Background noise is Lola.
Lola, sorry. She's just getting her bone.
Who is a gorgeous little doggy making herself known. So you looked for stories and they weren't necessarily out there.
No, not when I was sort of over the past 6 years looking for stories of hope and things. I did find a few, but there were never many stories about surrogacy, which is why I started to write about it, about our journey and about talk about it, really. So
amazing.
Yes.
It really is. And yeah. Jack, you know, like I said to you just before we came on, still Lola, you're the first man on the podcast. Thank you so much, like, because we don't hear from the guys, and I have got a kind of a male perspective episode coming up, but it really is so important. So we want to make sure that we get, as you know, as much from you as possible as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, obviously men probably aren't as open as women a lot of the time, but
they're not. Yes. But you're one half of this partnership, you know, and that's why it's so important to get your side. So thank you so much. I really appreciate it. So who wants to go first? The question I always ask, the brief, but not necessarily so brief in this case. Yeah. History of your trying to conceive.
Shall I go?
Yeah, I think you know a bit more.
Yeah, so trying to keep it brief. So we have been trying to conceive for 6 years. So a couple of years after we got married, we decided that it was the right time for us to try. Initially, it didn't actually take too long to get pregnant, but the first time we got pregnant, we found out quite early on that it was an ectopic pregnancy. So we went for an early scan just because my gut instinct kind of told me something wasn't quite right. I'd had some pain, and I just felt things weren't quite as they should be. So the first time that happened, I had one of my tubes removed because the medication didn't work to remove the pregnancy, as it were. So that was kind of our first experience. We then went on to conceive a couple more times that first year, and naturally, but I would miscarry very early on, and it became quite a regular occurrence that for the first couple of years. We then went for a few tests and found out that I had quite a low egg reserve. So the NHS advised us to go for private IVF because I only had one tube and a low egg reserve. They just felt that was the right sort of decision for us at the time. I think at that point it had been maybe 3 years in. So we then went on to have 4 rounds of IVF over the course of about 2 years. Majority of those times I fell pregnant, and again I would miscarry around the 7-week mark. We never really got to see a heartbeat at any of those times, but I always fell pregnant. Just after the last IVF, we had, on the last round, we had PGS testing. So everything came back normal, and the clinic said they didn't see a reason for us, for it not to work. So they implanted 2 embryos. Again, I fell pregnant, and again, miscarried quite early on. And at that point, it was about 4.5 nearly 5 years into the journey, and I think we got to a place of thinking that this just wasn't going to work for us. At that point, this is when one of my best friends since I've known since I was 12 came to us and offered to be our surrogate if we decided to go down that route. We still weren't ready for that, and actually I didn't know anything about surrogacy, so I was a bit like, that's amazing and incredible, but we weren't ready to fully accept that I wouldn't carry our child. So we went travelling, both took career breaks.
Yeah, a couple of months.
Had a great time. We needed to just get away from it, just get off that roundabout. And then the last day of our travels, I found out that I was pregnant, but ended up in A&E in Los Angeles, and it turned out to be another ectopic. So just at the end of our travels, we managed to get back to the UK, and I had to have my other tube removed. So it was really at that point that we thought, okay, enough's enough. Something's not going to work in the way that we want it to. And it was then that we went to Em and said, if your offer still stands, we'd like to try surrogacy. So that's kind of it in a nutshell.
Yeah, I know. It's terrible, isn't it? It's like a long, long time, and so much has gone into that.
Yeah.
Like, can you tell me, Jack, from your point of view, what's your, like, I guess, overriding feelings around that time and getting to the decision, I guess, about surrogacy?
Quite a lot of feelings, really, different ones. But yeah, the overriding is just getting to that final point of having a baby and the best way to do it. And, you know, obviously seeing Sophie go through it for 5 or 6 years, it wasn't easy to watch. So in the end, it was just, as I say, getting a baby was the end goal. And if there was a way that obviously we could do it without Sophie, it was probably the easiest way, I think, in the end.
I think that quite often it must be harder, and I know I've had this conversation with my husband and I've spoken to other people, and just generally not trying to conceive related, watching someone go through stuff, I think can be more difficult, like the frustration.
Yeah, we can't do anything, you know. And it seemed like, it was 5 or 6 years, is all we spoke about, is all anyone spoke to us about. It just seemed to consume everything, and those couple of months we had away was nice. We sort of got away and just went to Western Australia and hit some beaches, and there was no one around. It was just quite nice just to get away from it all, really.
Yeah, just being you two again.
Yeah.
I remember on the second ectopic, when we got back to the UK and they said to us, you need to have your only remaining tube removed, I turned around to the doctor and I just said, I just can't tell you to do that, because that's almost giving away my one chance of ever being able to conceive naturally, you know. Even though that wasn't really working anyway, I just couldn't say yes. So Jack turned around and said, he made the decision, basically, that I felt I couldn't. And he said, you know, I'd rather, you know, I want you alive more than I want a baby. So that was just the joint decision that needed to be made. But at that point, I wasn't strong enough to make it for myself. So,
Well, I guess when the doctors say, you know, something happens, when you get stuck in a tube and it bursts and it can, you know, so if it could die, it's a bit of a... Yeah, it's a bit of a worrying thing to be told.
Yeah, that's an incredible decision to make, though.
I think, like I said, I'd seen her go through so much, it was just like, I felt I needed to make that decision and just take it out of her hands, so.
Yeah.
Amazing, well done you. That's really brave, it really is.
Yeah, it's tough, but I felt it was the best thing to do. Just, I guess, that was the end of us thinking, oh, we could still
get pregnant.
So it's just, that was the end of the line. So it just felt like it needed to happen.
And I suspect this was probably the furthest from your mind at the time. However, somewhere in the back of your mind, you had this offer from your friend Em. So we're going to fast forward very quickly here. because going through the grief of having your second tube removed.
Yeah.
what was the period of time? Did was, you know, between that and for the first time that you thought, maybe surrogacy is something we might be able to think about?
I mean, I think we'd had discussions when we were in Australia that if it came to it, was that something that we would be, you know, we would like to try? And I think we'd actually made that decision there that we would. It was just the final nail in the coffin, as it were, when I had the second ectopic. It almost pushed us quicker to that decision. But it was about 6 months from her offer to when we went back to her and said, look, does the offer still stand? Because, you know, when she first told us, I don't know about you, but I didn't really believe her. I thought, you know, she's just being a good friend, you know, but never thought of it as a serious sort of option at the time. Because I'd never even read up on surrogacy, you know. I just never thought that would be an option for us. So it was a couple of weeks after my surgery that we got Em and James round and we sat them in the garden and we said, are you serious about the offer? And they said, yeah, absolutely, we're still serious about it. So,
I guess there are other options as well, aren't there? It's not just surrogacy. You can have donor eggs or adopted or so. Yeah, but I felt this was the best.
Yeah, because best no way one, to go yeah, forward. No one knew. No one could tell us whether it was my eggs or, you know, me carrying the baby.
Yeah,
you know,
that's the thing that I found with all the hospitals. No one actually gave us a proper answer as to why.
Yeah.
And I'm a bit more cynical than Sophie, so I know they're obviously a business and. They tell you, oh, have these tests, do this, do that, and you do it, and nothing ever comes back, and then you're back to square one. And in my back of my mind, I was like, are they just telling us to do all this stuff because they know we're going to do it? They charge. I know it's a bad way to think about it, but...
Well, you would, yeah, you had that sort of, those sort of thoughts, didn't you? So we had all of that.
No one could tell us, no one could say anything. And every doctor said, oh, I can do that. Whether it's like a pride thing for them, and they're like, oh, I can do it, you'll get pregnant with us. And yeah, I think I was a bit more, I think I'd sort of had enough of listening to doctors tell us this, that and the other.
Yeah, I think that makes me think of two things that I do say kind of quite regularly, obviously because I'm in this world quite a lot and speaking to different people. And one of them is that I am eternally frustrated. You know, like a couple of years ago, IVF turned 40. And I was asked at the time to say what that meant to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, it's bittersweet. You know, it's amazing because it's given the world millions of babies. And that's incredible.
Yeah.
However, there are still so many of us out here that have unexplained infertility.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not getting any answers. And I want us to know now what's going to happen, and I hope this happens for the people who are trying in 20, 30, 40 years time, is that there'll be more research so that some of those answers will be made available. Yeah. So someone in 20 years or 30 years could tell me why I couldn't, you know, kind of conceive naturally.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is a massive frustration of mine, and there needs to be so much more research and work done around that so that we do get answers.
Yeah.
Because none of this is fair, and to not have answers so that we can understand. Having said that, I know people who get answers and there isn't a treatment, or there's still frustration.
Yeah.
No, an answer is not the answer, but the more knowledge we have, definitely, is just more powerful to us.
Yeah.
In whether that's because it can quote unquote fix us, or whether it's so that we can kind of reconcile with ourselves what's happening. Both ways, you know, the information is powerful. The other thing is with clinics, my view, and I can have quite a cynical view on clinics, having worked with them kind of in a behind the scenes way, and I guess being a patient myself, so I see both sides. I do feel like most clinics will say yes to things because they want to get you pregnant.
Yeah.
You know, does it mean you should be handing over money, money hand over fist? Not necessarily. Do they have a responsibility to say, look, this is your time to stop? You know, if you choose to go and have, you know, speak to another doctor, that's up to you. But, you know, I'm telling you, you know, I really feel, and a lot of doctors I know do that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure there are some out there. I was talking to a clinic the other day and they said they don't say no to anyone.
No.
They tell them point blank what their results are, what they think, but they don't actually say. And that really surprised me, actually, because I think of it in a cynical way. They want their numbers to be good and their pregnancy results to be good because they want more business.
Yeah.
But yeah, that did surprise me when I was told that. But I think, yeah, there is a responsibility on the doctors. Mm. And I had that with mine. I went to see a private gynecologist and he said, you've got one more round in you and then go to donor eggs. Mm. And I really respected that, actually.
Yeah. I think our last, after our last failed cycle, the doctor actually, we saw a, you know, a very high up, very intelligent doctor, and actually I loved him, you know. But even he said, I don't know what route you should go down, because we can't tell if it is, you know, your eggs, embryos, or if it's you. So he sat in that room and he said, I just don't know whether I should tell you donor eggs or surrogacy. And he said at the time, if I was going to bet, I would say that you should go with donor eggs. And he said, it's up to you what you try, because you've got this friend that's offered. And that was his opinion. So we then we didn't really have a doctor's opinion to go on to make the decision as to what route to go down, which was difficult.
Mm.
But actually, it was probably for the best that it was just up to Jack and I in the end. In our opinion of what we should try next, really.
And what did you try next?
Surrogacy.
Yes. Yes. So biologically,
yes. It's our embryo. Yeah. So after we, you know, decided to go ahead, I should say that when we, you know, when Em and James said, yep, the offer's still there, they just had their second baby. So they had two children. Theo was about 3-4 months, so we knew that it wasn't going to happen immediately. We knew it was going to take a bit of time, you know, she was breastfeeding, that type of thing. So we went and went for a round of IVF to get some embryos in preparation for surrogacy at that point, with our clinic. And they went off to be PGS tested. Luckily, you know, we had two or three embryos and two came back normal. So they went in the freezer. And it wasn't for another year that we actually went through we actually got to a transfer with them. There was a few other bits that happened in between. Yeah. We had two cycles that didn't even get to transfer just because of various reasons, due to M's lining, you know, that type of thing. So that took a good 6 months. And then it was about a year after our cycle that we got to a transfer with M. It was quite a long waiting game. But then I know that if you find a surrogate that isn't a friend, it's, you know, it's still a long waiting game. So
Because you don't know, you know, they could be the picture of health, but until actually they're going through it, you know, and it's it can be the same for any of us. You know, you have cycles and suddenly you get a cyst or suddenly, you know, you like say your lining's not thick enough. You know, you just don't know necessarily until you're in it. Going back to when you were having your IVF, were you open? Did you tell your friends and family about it? And then, you know, when you got to the surrogacy, did the same amount of people know?
I can't remember, actually.
I think we told
close family.
We told our immediate family that we were starting IVF, because everyone had known about all the miscarriages, which I think in the end got to about 6 or 7 times. Our immediate family and then my closest friends knew that we were going through IVF.
A couple of my friends, I guess. I mean, I guess a few probably still think,
not the whole story. So I've initially, the first few years of trying to conceive, I think we were both quite quiet about it. But I guess for me, I needed a bit of a release in the end. So I did start writing and I started talking more about it. And actually, it really helped me. It was quite therapeutic. And then when we got to surrogacy, because everyone had been waiting such a long time for us, you know, and been so supportive of everything that we were going through, most people around us, or well, our close friends and family, knew from the start when Em offered.
We tried to keep it a bit under wraps, didn't we? We didn't want to tell everyone every date that was going to happen, you know, and scans and stuff.
No.
It became quite difficult because obviously everyone would just ask, and you know, you don't feel like you can't say, but you sort of want to try and keep it a bit under your hat just so, you know, just in case. But yeah, everyone. Yeah, I think everyone in the end knew, or sort of all family knew the dates of scans, and
I think everyone's been rooting for it.
A bit more pressure, but it makes it a bit more. I don't know the word, but
yeah.
No, I think pressure's probably.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because obviously everyone, like, so as you said, everyone was sort of rooting for it, and yeah, you're sort of just hoping it works.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're protecting yourself, aren't you? Yeah. And I guess. The more people you let through the door, the more people you feel like you're going to let down, which is never actually the case.
No, people just want to know, just to support. But it's also, I'm quite quiet and private, so I try and keep some bits sort of just between us. But yeah, it's been difficult to do that.
Yeah, I think I'm a bit more, I'm definitely more open than you are. In terms of, I find it, I have to talk about it to get through that period of time, and also to not put as much pressure on Jack, I suppose, because otherwise he'd have me, you know, crying to him all the time. I need, you know, other people around me that can, you know, support him as well. So
if you don't mind me asking, have you found anywhere to talk, like, have you sought counselling?
Yeah, I did go counselling. No, I had a bit of an incident with some friends when we'd been out drinking a bit, and it all just, I think it all just came out, and after that I was like, no, probably maybe I'm a bit more sort of there's a lot of feelings inside maybe that I didn't realise. So yeah, I went to counselling, and it did help.
I think, like, thank you for saying that, and I definitely don't think you're alone.
No,
you do, you get drunk and it kind of comes out then, doesn't it?
Yeah, it
and did. Like with anything, you often hurt the people who are closest to you.
Yeah, it's just sort of one incident really that just made me think, actually, this is something needs to change and something, obviously, So, yeah, that was a bit of a catalyst for it.
Yeah, probably the worst thing at the time, but the best thing in the long run.
So woke up the next day and like, oh, damn, did that really happen? Mm. But, it wasn't anything particularly bad. It was just
a good turning point.
Friends. Yeah, and a bit of a emotional evening, and then after that it was, right, that's it. I need to sort that out.
Yeah, Well done you for kind of recognising that.
Yeah. Well, I didn't really like that sort of side that came out, so it was a bit of an eye-opener.
Yeah, it affects us all, it really does. And I think that bottling it up, and like, not just you at all, anyone, like male, female, you know, it's going to come out somewhere. And you know, so if we can find people to talk to, whatever that looks like, I think it's a really, really positive kind of outcome.
Yeah.
So.
And I think that was really important for me to see that, you know, Jack recognised that actually he did need to talk about things, and I think he needed to probably talk to someone that wasn't me, because it was, you know, it was good for him to speak to someone from the outside world that wasn't, you know, in this little infertility bubble that we were in. So
it wasn't not just you, but the family and close friends. It was it was probably easier to talk to someone for me that I didn't really know, that I had no idea.
Yeah,
that you can actually maybe be a bit more open with.
Yeah, and sometimes you say things that you would say in front of your partners, but it's just you just want to say it to someone else, don't you?
Yeah.
And sometimes you say things that you wouldn't say in front of your partners, but you need to say it, so it's good to have someone to say it to.
Yeah.
So, I think, we've all been there, certainly. So you have made the decision. Em and James are sat in your garden, you said.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you have said yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're going to.
They've said yes as well.
And they've said yes.
They said yes. They're still saying yes. Thankfully.
And you know the route you're going to go down. So you created these embryos. We've had some transfers.
Yeah.
And then you have a transfer that isn't stopped.
Yeah, it isn't
stopped.
So it actually happened. Yeah, it actually happened. Yeah.
And then what happens next? Tell
us. So it was last July that we finally got to a transfer that actually got transferred, which was, yeah, an incredible day. Like, Em obviously has never been through IVF or anything, so I think the whole build-up to the transfer, she found really interesting. You know, we all went to the clinic together on the day of transfer, you know, went down to the room, and Em and I went in, and Jack, you waited outside, didn't you? Mm. And we had one embryo transferred. And then, you know, you leave the clinic and it's like, oh, okay, well, what's going on now, you know? It's like, you know, you just have to kind of, it's the waiting game, isn't it? Mm. The 2-week wait, which obviously I've been through quite a few times, so I knew the anxiety that came with it. And Em had never been through that. So it was a difficult couple of weeks for me. But actually, almost, it was easier than when I'd had transfers, because I actually trusted Em's body more than I trusted my own. So I knew that she could carry a child. I knew she could get pregnant, you know. So we were just relying on our embryo working. Mm.
Well, I never really had any doubts that it would work with Em.
Yeah, well, I did, but you did.
I was pretty sure it was going to work. But towards the end, with your rounds, I always felt like it was, I don't know, just not really going to happen. So, yeah, but with Em, I came out and I was like, I think that's a chance.
You were very
I think
positive.
That's, yeah, that'll work.
Yeah, which was good. It was good to have positive people around me, especially because, you know, having so much failure for 6 years, I never believed that it would work, to be honest. So a couple of weeks after transfer, I think it was a weekend, we were due to test on the Sunday, and we woke up on the Saturday morning, and I had this feeling that we should do a test. And I texted Em and I said, oh, how do you feel about doing a test today? And she said, I'm going to the toilet now, I'm ready, like, let's do this, you know. And then we sat in bed, Jack and I, and we were like, I just kept saying, what if it's negative, what are we going to do? What are we actually going to do? And she FaceTimed us, and her and James FaceTimed us. And they hadn't actually looked at the test. She'd done it, she put it back in the box. And they held the test up, and it said 1 to 2 weeks pregnant. And I burst into tears. I think you were quite emotional. Yeah. Em was crying, you know, James was whooping. So it was a couple, we had a good 5 minutes of being very joyous. And then obviously, knowing what we know, I can get pregnant with our embryo, but it's the bit afterwards that's the problem. So we were very then cautious, and we were like, right, let's not get too excited. Let's see what happens sort of the next week or two. So Em had some blood tests done, and the HCG was doubling, which, I mean, it hadn't usually for me before, which was one of the first sort of signs that the pregnancy wasn't going to
double.
Yeah, it always doubled, but it was very low.
Yeah, it was low, yeah.
They were quite low results. So again, I'm thinking of the worst case scenario that, you know, she will go on to have an early miscarriage. Bless her, she'd do, I've got tests every day for us for about 2 weeks, seeing if the lines were getting darker, that type of thing. And then her and James and Molly and Theo, their children, were going off to Scotland. They'd had this plan to go to Scotland for about a month in their camper van. And it was kind of at the same time as we'd need an early scan. So Em said that she would go to the early scan in Scotland. We wouldn't be there, but actually I think it was good for us not to be there because of the anxiety that, I mean, I was definitely feeling at that point. The other thing I will say is that Em doesn't ever have one pregnancy symptom. She didn't with her too. Never a day of sickness, never, you know, saw boobs, nothing. So there was nothing to go on, which was normal for her.
Mm. You're like, give me some sickness, please.
I know. I kept saying, well, how do you feel today? And she was like, Sophie, I just feel normal, like, but that's fine. She's quite good. She's always been good at putting my mind at ease, you know. And she called us from Scotland and... she said she was going to FaceTime us during the scan, but she had no reception. So we knew she'd gone in, and then we waited and waited, and we were sat in the lounge with my mum, and I just said, what if, you know, what if there's not a heartbeat? What if there's not a heartbeat? Because it was still, it was 7 weeks, so, you know, around that time you usually, hopefully, would see one. And then she called us, and I just knew from the minute she picked up the phone that it was all okay, because she was just like, there's a heartbeat, you know, and we were just, oh, that was the best, probably that was a better day than when she told us she was pregnant, because I knew that that was
further than we'd ever got before
seeing the heartbeat. So yeah, that was incredible that day. And then she came back down to England a couple of weeks later, and Jack and I got to go to the next scan with her. So that was a 10-week scan.
And what did that feel like, Jack?
The heartbeat and the...
Going to that scan.
It was still quite nerve-wracking, just obviously, like I said, what we've been through, and you sort of don't want to get your hopes up too much. And then, but no, it was, like I said, I was sort of always confident it was going to be fine. So it was quite nice to actually go into a scan room thinking this actually could be all right now. And it was, so yeah, it was great. It was pretty amazing to hear it.
Yeah.
Did you guys do the, just tell me there's a heartbeat and then you can sort everything out?
Pretty much. I'll do it first.
I need to know what we're doing.
I see it on the machine. It was, I mean,
in the waiting room, me, you and Em. James came to that
so
one.
The first one. As we walked in, everyone else in the reception room was like, what's going on here?
Four of them going in. And I couldn't really speak to anyone. Like, I get really, really nervous. Jack was like, it's going to be okay, I promise. Just scam rooms fill me with dread.
I think there's a lot of people that'll be listening that totally...
I think you're always going to be a bit nervous going in, even if... You're always going to be a bit worried, I'm sure, that something could have happened.
Well, and especially once you've been kind of through anything, you know, like, it's always going to be somewhere in the back of your mind, isn't it? Even when you've got further than you... ever have before, because of everything that's gone before, you're just going to have that little level of anxiety.
Absolutely. But as soon as she said there's the heartbeat, relaxed into it.
Like, let you enjoy the next few minutes.
And him. And we should say at this point, I might have said this at the beginning. How pregnant are you at the moment?
So yesterday we were 36 weeks.
This baby is fairly imminent.
We found out 17 weeks. We went for a private gender scan. We were all convinced it was a girl initially, until we were at the scan, and the sonographer, she flicked onto 3D mode, and me and Jack just looked at each other. And we just said,
just look like a boy.
I think it's a boy. Yeah. I think that's a boy.
You were still like, no, it's not.
Just looked like a boy. So, that was 17 weeks. We found that out.
So talk us through the decision to find out. Like, we're in a time now where we can find out, but it is completely an individual choice. You decided to find out. Did you both want to know? Did one of you feel more strongly?
I think Sophie was a lot stronger. I wasn't fussed either way. I would have happily not found out or found out. I didn't mind. I didn't mind either way, but you were quite strong.
I definitely needed to know. I just felt that I needed to do anything I could to, you know, because I wasn't carrying my own child, to be able to bond before the baby was here. So, it got to 17 weeks and I just said, I need to know tomorrow. So we booked a scan.
You booked it like Friday, didn't you?
I booked it the day before. And then, drove Jack there, much to his surprise, and said, we're going to find out what the baby...
Did you not know?
We were going to meet our friends for lunch. And you're like, I've got a surprise. Who's car? I thought someone was coming for lunch, or like, I didn't know what we were doing.
We didn't actually find out in the room, though.
No.
My brother... I'd always dreamed of giving us a bit of a gender reveal sort of party, hadn't he? So
yeah, which I again, I was a bit like, I'm not sure I want that to But actually, it wasn't a big sort of flashy fit. It was just all the close family and it was done quite tactfully. So it was okay.
Yeah. No.
How did he do it? Just because I'm curious.
he actually dressed Lola, our dogger,
really?
In a little blue shirt. So everyone was in the kitchen, and we were like, he was like, "Are you ready?" And then he let her in, and then she ran, and we were all like, I think me and my mum were the most shocked because we always always thought it was a girl until the scan. But that was incredible, like, to know that I could then visualize him, and I could then, it really helped me to then buy him some clothes, you know, and decorate his nursery. He's been a big thing, and it was all little things to try and help us bond with him.
Once
I got the initial shock, I do think it was really important, on that respect, just to do what I could to sort of come to terms with that, you know, that we were actually going to have a baby finally, which I never thought would ever happen. So, yeah, that was quite an incredible couple of weeks finding out.
Yeah.
So.
And it's the bonding, isn't it? Yeah. Like you say, you had thought it was going to be a girl so much.
Yeah.
And how did that feel? Were you, and I don't want to say disappointed because I don't think it is. I think what it is we kind of connect in one way, thinking, you know, that it's one sex, and then it's just getting our head around it, isn't it? That it's not what we thought. So how did that feel?
I mean, since I was a little girl, I'd always thought I'll have a little girl one day, because I'm quite a girly girl. That's what I always imagined. So I was very shocked when I found out it was a boy. And I also think because I don't know that we'll go on to have any more, it was almost coming to terms with, okay, you might not have a daughter, which is what you visualised for so many years. But that's why I needed to know, because now I do know, and I'm a great believer in, and I've read a lot of things, you know, that you are given what you are meant to have. I'm meant to have a son. He's, you know, been given to me. And, you know, so many people have said to me how, you know, little boys love their mummies and that type of thing. So I guess I just needed to know to get my head around the fact that it would be different to what I'd always visualised, which I think is okay. And I think a lot of women do go through that. You know, maybe they want a boy and they get a girl, or they, you know, but you do feel guilty for, you know, even thinking that for a minute after you've been through so much to get, you know, and just feel lucky to have a baby. But yeah, now I have got my head around it, and actually I just hope he just looks like Jack as a baby, because he was just so cute. little blonde locks and blue eyes. And I do. I think I was meant to have a son, you know.
I think that's a really lovely way of thinking about it. And I don't think it is about guilt, although I know that lots of people will feel like that. And I can understand it, even though sat here, it's very easy for me to say that you shouldn't feel like that. It's just a thought process, isn't it? And Jack, how did you feel, having been a bit kind of on the fence about, you know, not minding one way or the other, when you did find out you were having a boy, how did that feel?
Again, it was obviously really, really nice, really special. I guess as a dad, you like to have a little sort of picture, a little boy that you can do, you know, play sports with or do anything with. So, it was. I wasn't a boy or girl. Obviously, I was overly pleased with either. So it was. Boy was just. I wasn't shocked. I knew from the scan. I sort of had an idea it was going to be a boy.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like knowing has helped you bond more, or did you, maybe you didn't need that necessarily?
No, not really. I don't think so. It's a bit, not in the way you, Sophie, was saying. No, I don't think so. I think it's, a lot of men have said to me, because like you've said, you felt, because you're not carrying it, the bond, but a lot of my friends have said, but obviously we never carry it, so it's the same sort of, you're always bonding the same way. And, obviously we've tried to see them as much as we can.
Mm.
So it gets used to our voices and stuff like that. So it's obviously a bit of a different way. But all my friends are, it's just the same as, I guess, us and their wives or girlfriends having babies. It's, you know, you're just there to support and, you know, help and do the best you can.
I and I know, again, I can sit here and say this, like, being pregnant was wonderful, don't get me wrong, and I never thought it would happen. So yeah. I was terribly anxious and terribly grateful and loved and hated every minute of it, kind of thing. But I remember hearing on a podcast a couple of years ago now, and it was about donor conception. And it was ultimately, the pregnancy is 9 months. And it's when the baby gets here, that's what makes you the mum and the dad.
Yeah.
And, and I can sit here with Ren, who's 8 months old. It was wonderful being pregnant. And I've got the memories and I've got the photos. But it really is now that makes me her mum. It really, really is. And it would be really great to hear you say that, you know. And particularly you, I'm looking at Sophie, because... because of the physicality, I think, Jack, you're 100% right. And I know my husband has said to me that a lot of his friends, you know, oh, well, the boys don't bond until the baby's here. You know, I think that that is something that a lot of men probably feel. But yeah, it would, I just, it is when they get here and when they get here, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. What have you got in for you?
I know. I still feel we don't really fully believe it. Like until he's handed to us in a few weeks. It's, it still does feel quite surreal to me anyway.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, I guess it's similar for most parents. You know, you just, like today, you just went out, walked down the canal, had some lunch, and we're like, eh, probably won't be able to do this in a couple of weeks.
Well, not for a little while.
When you do,
it'll change.
When you do, it'll be like, yes, we did it. Whereas today, you're like rolling back, having a couple of bits. It'll be like, oh my God, we got out.
I think like the biggest thing, obviously, that I had to accept was that I wasn't going to be carrying my own child, which, you know, did take a lot. But so many people, like you've just said to me, say that doesn't mean that you're not his mum just because you haven't carried him. You know, as soon as he's arrived, he's passed to you and that's it, over to you. You know, you are his mum. Em's, you know, the best babysitter in the world, you know, looking after him for 9 months. And then after that, it is over to us. So... I just can't wait for a few weeks' time just to see what he looks like and how we're going to feel, and almost just that relief, because I just feel like with going through, you know, anything to do with infertility, it's just like having a big weight on your shoulder constantly every day.
It does feel like that. It has been 6 years of just constant like babies, you know, fertility and meetings and doctors and nurses. It'd be nice to have him here and just enjoy it and hopefully try and forget what the last sort of few years has been.
And you do, you know, and it's only from my experience, I won't go into it loads, but you do and you don't, you know, and some of it makes you better at parenting, I think, because of it. Some of it makes you possibly, I don't want to say not better at parenting, but kind of more anxious or worried about things, but not necessarily. So a minute ago, Sophie, you mentioned about, you know, you had to, I'm paraphrasing completely, get your head round not carrying your child. How did you do that? What did that look like?
I think because we had literally tried everything, you know, I'd been on every sort of drug going. I'd had intralipid infusion. We'd had all the PGS testing. I think because I knew that we had tried everything, I almost felt like, okay, I can't turn around and say, you know, we missed this or we didn't try that, before accepting that, okay, I might not be able to carry our child. I think going through the second ectopic, like I said, was really the final straw. And it was at that point that I really just thought, okay, do I think I could cope with someone else carrying my child, whether it was my friend or anyone? And the bottom line was that I just wanted a baby, and I didn't really at that point care how that baby got to us. I just knew that the baby was the end goal. And if that meant that I needed to just trust my best friend to carry him for me, then that's what it... I could accept that at that point. I don't think... I mean, I say I accept it. I'm, you know, 90%... I got to the, you know, 90% mark of accepting it. And I guess 10% of me will always be... feel a little bit, you know, sad that I didn't get to carry my own child. But, you know, there's a lot of women out there who don't like being pregnant or go through bad births, you know, that type of thing. And I've got friends who say, you know, I would have loved not to have been pregnant. So I have to take the positives from it, because that's the only way you get through it.
Yeah.
So...
did you get any support? Did you go to, like, Surrogacy UK or...?
We didn't. I knew it was there. We didn't go to Surrogacy UK, mainly because... I think I emailed them a couple of times, but mainly because Em had made it so easy by offering. I felt like I didn't really need... you know, we had our clinic and we had Em, and we kind of knew... we figured out the process ourselves. But I had counselling, you know, I'd had counselling for quite a few years, and then, you know, that counselling developed into, okay, can I, how do I think I'm going to feel with another lady carrying my child? And, you know, being quite close to that lady, I'm going to see her a lot. You know, how is she going to feel, you know, handing over my baby? We had to make sure that all of that was talked about at the very beginning. I needed to know, you know, how she was going to feel, because... it is complicated. It's not a, you know, normal situation, as it were. So we had group counselling, didn't we? Emma James had separate counselling. So we had all of that process in place. Jack kept reminding me, you know, let's just get this baby. It doesn't matter how.
Yeah. I guess you just, going back to that, you don't actually know how you're going to feel once the baby's here, though. I mean, you don't know how Em's going to actually feel once she's had the baby. You know, it's easy to say, oh, I'm fine, I can do this or that. But, yeah, just there's always that sort of little niggling doubt that you're like, well, she might get really attached and it might be a bit more difficult than we're thinking. Hopefully it won't be, but...
no, she's always been very good at putting our minds at ease.
Yeah, she's always calm.
You know, she'd thought about the, before even offering, she'd thought about it for about 6 months and, you know, did all her research and everything, because she said, I would never have, I'd been able to offer it to you and then take it away. So.
It wasn't just a spur of the moment, obviously. No. It was, she'd had a lot of research and spoken a lot about it. And, yeah, I guess, seeing you go through everything probably spurred her on to sort of actually come to us and offer it.
It's such an incredible gift. So it speaks volumes about her, but it also speaks volumes about you guys, you know, that she would offer that. You know, it really does.
Yeah, but also James, I sort of made sure I spoke to James about it just to make sure he was sort of fine with it, and obviously knew it was going to be tough for him to have his wife being pregnant and obviously all the aftercare that she's going to need. So, yeah, we had to make sure that James was on board as well, and obviously he was, thankfully. So, yeah, he's been good as well.
So tell us, and these can be really flippant things, you know, like what are the good things about not being pregnant?
Oh, well, I've been able to have a few drinks for the past 9 months. I mean, initially I said, I think we went to a wedding when Em was quite early pregnant. We went, all four of us, didn't we? And I was like, oh, I'm not going to drink a lot, don't worry, Em. And Em was just like, Sophie, like, don't even worry about it. So I guess that is a positive, that, you know, when I'm having a stressful moment or worried about things, I can, you know, have a glass of Prosecco, that type of thing. What are the other benefits of, like...
I guess, I don't know, not giving birth.
Yeah. You know, people go through all sorts of births, don't they, and can end up in all sorts of situations. Yeah. And I guess for Em, she's had two babies. She had two home births. She knows that... she knows the process, that type of thing. So as far as that part's concerned, at least it's not going into the unknown with me.
And like you said, the recovery, you know, she's going to have to go through the recovery, which we'll talk to her
and
about.
She's decided on a C-section as well. So that's a whole different story this time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there probably are a lot of pros to not being pregnant. I guess for me, I would still always choose to be able to carry my own child.
Of course.
But I just have to think of all the little positives.
That's the thing. And like, and on the far side, you know, you won't have that recovery, you know, which will hopefully make everything easier for you. What about, if you don't mind me asking, about feeding? Have you thought about breastfeeding? Because that is possible, isn't it?
I had thought about it and I had looked into it. And I think I discussed it with someone at the clinic. And I would have had to start the medication, the hormones, quite early on in the pregnancy. And at that point, I wasn't quite ready to believe it was happening. That was one reason. And then a lot of people said to me that women can take, you know, these hormones and then it might not work. And then you've gone put your body through all of that and it hasn't worked. And then it's quite stressful. So that was something else I considered. And then I just thought, you know, I know a lot of women that haven't been able to breastfeed and their babies have turned out just fine, starting off with bottle feeding. And I'd put so many hormones in my body for the past 6 years. I just couldn't do it. I just thought it was just one step too far in terms of the stress element of things. I wanted to be as fit and healthy for this baby when he arrives as possible. Not putting myself through a induced lactation, which might not then work, and then, you know, that stress coming out onto him. So, we decided quite early on that actually I wasn't going to try that, and we were just going to go with bottle feeding. Although Em is going to express the colostrum.
Yep.
So she's going to do that pre him arriving, mm-hmm. which she offered from, you know, from quite early on. So he'll have the colostrum and then he'll go on to bottles.
Yeah.
So, and that means, you know, Jack and I can share, you know, the feeds as well, and which has its pros.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah.
So that'll be another way of bonding with him for Jack, to be able to feed him as well. So that was, the thought process on that.
That makes good sense.
Yeah.
It really does. You know, you've been through so much already, and breastfeeding can be just the hardest thing anyway.
Yeah.
And to, like you say, have gone through everything and then to give yourself more hormones, that may or may not work.
Yeah,
you just don't need that, really.
If there had been a guarantee that it would work, maybe I'd have considered it, but so many people and so much the research I did, it was sort of 50-50, and I just, at that time, I just thought, I just don't think it's the right decision.
And it's a completely personal, there is no right and wrong, ultimately.
Yeah.
It's whether, you know, in whatever situation your baby comes into the world, you know, there's no right or wrong.
No.
Like the whole phrase, fed is best. It truly is. And, you know, I've had conversations on this podcast with people, one person in particular I can think of, Shima, and they went on to mixed feeding because, you know, that makes life so much easier. And it's, you know, as long as your baby is happy and healthy and thriving, and as long as you guys are happy, as parents are happy, healthy and thriving, that's the important thing. It really is. So, I think you've made the right decision there for sure. So there's just one kind of legality. We can just talk about that for a minute. So, because, you know, it's the kind of boring paperwork, but obviously it's incredibly important. We're in the UK and this is a friend of yours, so you haven't gone through any agencies or anything. Did you use the same clinic as you had used previously?
We used the same clinic in London, and they talked us through the process. I'd already done quite a lot of research anyway. So legally, when the baby is born in the UK via surrogacy, the woman that's given birth to that baby goes on the birth certificate as the mother, and if the mother's married, then the husband goes on the birth certificate as the father. So we knew from quite early on that Emma James would be on his initial birth certificate. We had to give our clinic a bit of a contract that we both, all four of us, had written and signed. Although legally, it's not legally binding. So, and that just said things like if anything were to happen to Em during the pregnancy, who would make the decision on the baby? If anything were to happen to the baby, who would make that decision? So that was all kind of written out by all four of us.
So is that your choice to answer those questions?
Yes. Yeah. The clinic did ask us for a contract, but they didn't say what it had to say in the contract. It just
said... So
they
don't give you any guidance?
I mean, you can get guidance online, okay. I'm sure.
Well, the clinic didn't give us much on that, did they?
No, really? They just said, we just need, you know, the key points from you on a contract. We could have gone, we could have got a solicitor or lawyer to get involved. But at that point, I'd found quite a couple of people online on Instagram who I still speak to, and they'd been through it in the UK, and you know, they said we don't think, you know, we didn't use anyone, so you can get like a template online and you can just write it yourselves, because it's not legally binding, so it's, you know, there's no point paying out for something that there is not, you know, going to stand up in court anyway. And we did put a lot of trust into Em and James, of course, like we had to, you know, this was a big thing we were going through, and that probably doesn't always work if you don't know the people, so.
Yeah, I think obviously being friends makes it, puts your mind at ease probably just a little bit more than someone they didn't know.
Yeah, and I guess that's why people use agencies, because then people have been vetted.
And I think that would be the right thing. That definitely would be the right thing to do.
Yeah, that would have been what they'd done if we, obviously, if Em hadn't have come forward.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, to offer.
Yeah.
After he's born, we register his birth and Em and James go on his certificate. And then we have to apply for a parental order 6 weeks, when he's 6 weeks old, and then that takes, I think it takes up to about 6 months to get a court date, and once we get that date, they basically rip up the original birth certificate and they give us a new one with Jack and I as the legal parents, so there will be that process to go through once he's here, which isn't, you know, in an ideal world you wouldn't have to go through, because, you know, genetically he's our child, but, you know, it is, I just have to think of it as it's just paperwork, and that's, we can get through it, it's fine.
Yeah. Well, I was just thinking, you've just got even more special days ahead of you, though, you know, and celebrations ahead of you, really, because that's going to be a really special day, isn't it?
Yeah, oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We'll have a big, celebration once that part's done.
We'll
get
his passport ready, don't we?
Yeah.
We'll actually go on another day.
Are you?
Yeah.
2 months off?
Yeah, when he's about 8 weeks old. Yeah. So, but that's, so Em and James will need to sign his passport information, that type of thing.
Yeah.
And if there's any, if anything were to, if he needed any medical care or anything, we just have to make sure that Em and James are around if need be. So there is all of that to think of. But everyone we've spoken to, health visitors and midwives, have been so supportive and know the situation, and it will, you know, help us in whatever way they can.
That's been brilliant. And you have also been going, I think I read, to NCT.
Yes.
How's
yes,
that been?
There's a lot of information to take in.
There is
a lot. I can't remember any of it.
You're hoping it'll kick in.
Yeah. That was good, actually. I said to Sophie, I was like, I don't really want to go. We'll be a bit like the elephants in the room and all these pregnant women, and we'll just be stand out a little bit. But actually, it was good. It was good to go.
Yeah.
I think it was good to meet people having babies around the same time as us for, you know.
But actually, the lady that was teaching us already knew Sophie, so she sort of knew the situation, so actually that helped. So straight away, she...
Yeah.
Not introduced us, but...
Put us at ease a little bit.
So obviously you introduced yourself. She came to us first. Was like, these guys go first. So she was she was good.
Yeah.
After that, it was obviously just, it was fine.
Yeah.
It's like a normal. There were a couple of bits where I know that she said, you could probably leave. Like, yeah. It's probably done to concern, like, you won't need this. So we're like, okay, fine. But yeah, no, it was good to do it.
I think it was important to, you know, try and do things that, you know, people in whatever is a normal situation nowadays, but in a normal pregnancy, get to do. So it was, I really wanted to go and experience it.
I think that's brilliant. I really do. And it just, you know, and that's why I love this podcast, or I love being able to talk to people, you know, because it just wouldn't have crossed my mind necessarily, without having this conversation. And when I read it, you know, actually, that's the most natural thing that you're going to do.
Yeah.
But it's just not something that I had thought about before.
It's nice to do something normal, you know, because it's obviously everything's not been quite a normal pregnancy in that way. So, yeah, it was good to have that, and
also to go along just Jack and I, just the two of us, because, you know, every appointment we go to, we're usually with them. So it was, yeah, it was good for both of us to just do something. It felt really weird, but to do something just us.
Yeah. And what was the response from the others in the room?
Yeah, they were. They were like, that's amazing. Yeah. Like, yeah,
brilliant.
So, yeah, they were great.
Yeah.
Got a little WhatsApp group now, and you know, everyone's. I don't think anyone knows the full story, the full history. People, we haven't really gone through everything.
Yeah, maybe when you're out of classes and you're meeting up with people, they might ask a question. Hello.
Yeah.
Obviously, we don't. We're not going to come out and just start talking about it. So if people ask, obviously, we can tell them. There are a couple of people that we got on better with, so I guess if we see them, they'll probably come out and ask and just try and find out.
Yeah,
that's it. As the relationships develop as time goes on.
Yeah.
So, for sure. And you will have talked about birthing, because you do talk about birthing options within your NCT classes. You mentioned earlier on that Em has opted for a C-section.
Yes.
And so who's going to be in the room?
Well, initially it was, the hospital said that you're only allowed one person in the theatre with them, which was going to be me. And then when we walked away from that appointment, I just suddenly felt quite sad that Jack wouldn't get the opportunity. So I wrote a letter to the hospital and explained everything, and the head of midwifery called me and said that absolutely they would do everything they could to let Jack be in the room as well in the theatre. So yeah, they've said that both of us are now allowed to be with them, which I was really pleased about, because, you know, I do think it is a different situation to normal, and that I want Jack to be able to have the opportunity to witness, you know, his son being born. So, and as long as Em was comfortable with that, which she's always said she is or was.
Yeah.
I think that was a big thing when they called and said that that was all okay.
That's amazing. Yeah. How did you feel?
Like I said, it was down to Em, really. If she was happy with me being in there, because obviously I know it's not a private, not going to be a private thing. So yeah, no, she, as long as she was happy, obviously I wanted to be in there. When they initially said it, I just sort of, when people say, just take it and you're like, okay, well, if you're not allowed, you're not allowed. I never sort of trying to kick up a fuss. But actually when they then rang and said, that's fine, it was nice to hear.
Yeah. Bit of a relief.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to, it'll be good to be in there.
Yeah.
Interesting to see, I can't imagine what it's
going to
be like.
I'm so excited for you. I really am.
It's going to be, yeah.
Well, we met one of the doctors, well, we had a consultation, didn't we, with the lady who may be doing the operation. So it was quite nice to meet her and see her face.
Hear how many people are going to be in the room, which is quite a lot.
With a C-section, isn't it?
Yeah. It's up to 15, I think. Yeah.
So I must get out of the way. But
yeah, I can't. Yeah, I just can't imagine that day at the minute. But obviously, that's if we get to that point. You know, she's never had her two children were full term, but you just never know. She might go into labour naturally early. So we'll just have to see.
That's a really good point.
Yeah.
And as far as, you know, not being able to imagine.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, you just don't know what's going to happen. That was one of my, not fears, but it's such an unknown.
Yeah.
So that's a really normal, I suspect, you know.
Yeah.
Like, again, I've only got my experience really to go by, but just a really normal feeling to have about it. Because you're just like, it doesn't compute necessarily, but you know that at the end you get the baby. Lola's back. So one last thing, and I just wanted to share this with you because of something that we were talking about earlier on, and it's about like bonding with the baby afterwards. And I think I was reading something you'd read before, and a story came to my mind that happened to me, and it was after I'd had Ren. I remember instantly loving her, you know, she was my daughter, she was this baby, you know, it was just incredible. But there was something that I didn't know was missing, or something that kind of wasn't quite clicking. And when you have a baby, the bounty people come round and they take a photo. Yeah. And I remember then seeing the photo of Ren on the screen. And it wasn't until I saw... I was looking at her the whole time, yeah, you know? Yeah. And it wasn't until I saw her picture on the screen, I thought, you're a person.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't know you yet.
Yeah.
And it was just the weirdest realisation. But actually, it was a really nice realisation for me. Because then, rather than her just being a baby and my baby, and it was like, actually, I'm looking forward to getting to know you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And work out who you are.
Yeah.
And I know that I've spoken to people that have had that, and it's taken weeks for that to happen. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of want to say that, because I don't think I've ever said that out loud before. And, you know, for people that it can take weeks.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in every situation, you know, it's going to be different. But, yeah, they're a whole different being.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess that's the thing that I guess you assume straight away, you'll be like, oh, yeah, bonding and amazing. But it may, as you say, it may take a little bit of time to... for it to happen, but hopefully it'll happen quite quickly.
Yeah, the realisation that he is our, you know, our baby, made from, you know, our embryo. I still can't get my head around it. But yeah, I think, like you say, no one does until, you know, might happen instantly. It might take a couple of weeks. Yeah. We'll just have to see.
But he'll be here in a few weeks.
Your little one. Just can't wait to see what he looks like.
Oh, I bet. Right, I think we're going to leave it there.
Yeah.
Unless there's anything kind of... So if you were talking to someone who was you a few years ago, what was missing?
I would talk about aftercare at clinics and stuff like that, but then I don't really know that that's fair to go into, because
it's talking about it to people.
I would tell people to, you know, connect with people on Instagram. There's so many women out there now who feel that they can talk about it and are more open and
I think when you're going through it, you just think it's us, only us. Everyone else seems to like all your friends were getting pregnant and having kids and my sister. And it's just like everyone seems to be, it's just us that can't. But actually, it's a much bigger sort of thing.
Yeah, it is a lot of
people.
3.5 million people in the UK alone. You feel like the only one.
Yeah, you do.
You feel quite alone. And in, you know, a really dark space. So I definitely think connecting with people, if you can, if you feel you can, is really important. And being open about things. And I would always say, you know, if I could write myself a letter now, you know, from three, four years back, I would say, it's okay to have those days where, you know, you don't want to see your friend who's got a child, or, you know, you feel sad when someone tells you they're pregnant. That's all normal. I used to feel a lot of guilt about that, and, you know, a lot of sadness that I felt that way. But no one can understand that feeling of when you want a child or a baby and you just can't get to that point. Yeah, I would just say sometimes you need to be selfish, and whatever you need that day, if you're having a bad day, then you have to do it.
And you will learn that you'll feel a bit like that when you have a baby.
Yeah.
The difference when you have a baby is that you can identify the other people who have got babies, so are probably feeling the same.
Yeah.
Whereas when you're trying, you don't know who's in that, because people aren't open necessarily.
Yeah,
so thank you so much for being open.
Yeah.
And I know categorically that this will help other people who are going through this.
Which is the most important thing.
Well, it's so important.
Yeah. And it's having hope, I guess, isn't it? That there is something that can be done, or something that can help you get to that point of having a baby. There's always, hopefully, always an answer.
Yeah, there's options that you can look at that will give you that little one.
Absolutely.
Oh, brilliant. Thank you so much, Sophie.
Thank
and Jack.
You
I really, really
us.
Appreciate
Thank
it. And we're looking forward to chatting then to Em and James.
Yeah.
All right, then, you two. Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks.